Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys with your host, Adam Emmert.
And,
And Jared Tim.
I'm going to say right now, I disagree with it, but it's really accurate.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, your Seahawks and Broncos bias podcast. Coming at you here from a rainy Missoula, Montana today, but it's kind of nice and cool.
Thank God for the rain.
Oh, thank God for the rain. I'm your co-host, Adam Emmert, sitting next to me here, as always, Jared Tim. How's it going, buddy?
Good, man. I'm doing pretty well.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we needed to do a podcast today because there's been a lot of shit that's gone on here over the last just couple weeks. It's amazing how busy we can stay with the offseason.
Kind of get into the doldrums of the season between OTAs and training camp, but really there are a lot of things to talk about. There's a lot of articles that we're pretty pissed off about that come out. So
we're
going to cover all of this stuff, you know, depth chart things. We just came out with our depth chart going into training camp, which is fairly interesting. Not too many big surprises, but you know, there's a couple things to go over still.
Interesting. Let's start with that, though. We're going to get into donkey spit right away today.
Yeah, that's the best bit.
To just cover real quickly here, though, is the beer we're drinking today is Black Star Beer from the Black Star Brewing Company.
And Whitefish, Montana.
Whitefish, Montana. We're going to get more into that later. Check us out in between the donkey spit and chicken scratch segments here. And we'll talk the chicken scratch segments. And we'll get into that a little bit. But let's start out with some donkey spit. Let's start out with that depth chart, Jared, that just came out. Is there anything about the Broncos depth chart here that surprised you?
Well, I'm not really surprised by anything that happened. A lot of the guys that we brought in as far as free agents are listed lower on the depth chart because training camp is what really decides all that stuff. So, you know, we have Quentin Jammer listed as our number three free safety and strong safety.
Whoa.
Even though that's the position, those are the two positions we're going to be working him into, he's still lower on the depth chart because we don't know what he's going to do as a Denver Bronco yet.
He just hasn't been there long.
Yeah, and so this is mainly just a preliminary roster list, basically.
Gotcha.
I guess the one thing that I did want to talk about was our offensive line. So this just came out this week is J.D. Walton had another surgery on his ankle, which hurts because he was really coming around as a center for us.
Oh, man.
And he went down week four last year, and we had to bring in Dan Copen, who did really well. He's got a lot of experience with a good quarterback. But he's still older, and we really wanted J.D. Walton back just to kind of sew up that position, another thing we wouldn't have to worry about. So come training camp, we're going to have to do some switching around on our offensive line. So basically this means at left tackle, of course, we have Ryan Clady. At left guard, we have Zane Beatles, who he's kind of our breakout offensive lineman.
I like Zane Beatles. I thought he's played well a number of times that I've watched him play.
And he's a great leader by example, and he's got some chemistry worked up with some of these guys too. And right now, the guy taking first-team snaps, or actually getting the first-team snaps, is Manny Ramirez at center. We had him backing up at guard, but now he's taking the center first-team snaps.
Wow, so is he then legal to play in the NFL since he don't test for HGH? Like, that's amazing. I didn't know that
you know,
could do that.
These two-sport athletes, I tell you what.
Well, I have a question, though. Okay. I mean, obviously, you have a little upheaval at the center position now. Why don't you guys take a look and see if you can coax maybe Jeff Saturday out of retirement? He just retired this last year. He was Peyton center for years and years.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I think there's a reason we didn't go after him last year.
I thought you guys did go after him. He just ended up signing with the Packers.
Loosely. It didn't seem to me that we aggressively went after him at all.
Maybe made him an offer. It wasn't one that he couldn't refuse, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, see you later to Green Bay.
Okay.
You know, Peyton Manning will get the ball for me in the Pro Bowl.
That was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, it was. That was a neat moment.
That was nice.
But at right guard, we have Luis Vasquez, who we just got from the Chargers.
Right. Yep.
Our clear starter. And at right tack, we have Orlando Franklin, who's awesome, too.
I love Franklin.
So, right now, Chris Cooper's coming back from an injury himself. Right. A whole string of them. But he's looked good, right? Yeah. And this last one was a forearm injury, so that doesn't have anything to do with your lower body.
No.
But we have him listed as our number two left guard, center, and right guard. So, we're looking to maybe move him around, possibly be a backup, maybe work into a starter at center.
So, he's your Swiss Army knife offensive
He's our utility guy.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to open a beer bottle with him? Go ahead. You want to cut something with him? Go ahead.
Coop's got you.
So, that was the main thing I kind of want to discuss is just how Chris Cooper could be moving around to potentially like three different positions this year. And thank God we went after Luis Vasquez. That was a big signing.
Well, that's going to help.
J.D. Walton's not going to be there for us.
Yeah. So how long is J.D. Walton projected to be out then?
There's been a couple of statements that came out that said anywhere between 4 to 5 months. all the way to the full season.
Holy cow. So this was November, a bad ankle injury.
Yeah. To have another surgery this late in the game, like, what happened during the rehab process to where they didn't see this earlier and have this surgery months ago?
Right. Well, do you think he could maybe give T.O. a call and see if he could get his hyperbaric chamber? You know, is it make
he's
it
probably
speed
already
it up?
Sleeping in one.
Oh, man.
I don't know. So,
yeah. I mean, T.O.'s not using it. He's not playing anymore.
He's not doing shit. Yeah. He probably can't even afford that anymore.
He probably pawned it to buy some more jewelry.
I would
at some
imagine
point or something. Yeah,
Jesus. So yeah, that was one of the things as far as our depth chart kind of goes.
Yeah.
I also recently read this article about how our Super Bowl window is closing.
Mm.
And I know a lot of that, like we talked about earlier, depends on Peyton Manning's ability to play this year and next year.
Right.
But one thing a lot of people are overlooking is that all the guys that Elway has drafted, only one is not currently on this team still. So we're building a team
serious?
Through the draft. Yeah.
So how many years is that? That's what, three? This is year
I think
three,
that's
right?
Three drafts. Yeah, that's the third draft.
And just
now.
One guy.
And just one guy is not on the roster. I don't know who it is because it doesn't matter.
I can guarantee you there's way more than one guy that's no longer on the Seahawks roster that the Carroll Schneider regime drafted. Like, there's no doubt about that.
Exactly. And that's another impressive thing about that is with our youth, I know we brought in a free agency, Wes Welker, Dominic Rogers Cromartie. We do have these veteran guys that we did bring in. Another thing, though, is 56 of the current players on our roster heading into training camp entered the league in 2010 or later. So we have a lot of youth on our team. We have a lot of guys who are experienced with the program. This is now a lot of these younger guys' second year with our defense also.
Gotcha.
I don't think our Super Bowl window is closing. I think we have a really good one as long as Peyton Manning's around. But I think we're building a really dominant franchise right now through the draft, thanks to the help of John Elway.
Well, look, you don't have to have a Peyton Manning to make it to a Super Bowl.
No, you don't.
If you have a really strong team around a guy. And I'm not saying Brock Osweiler can't be a Peyton Manning later on in his career. I think he could be awesome. I hope so.
We don't really know much about him, but as far as what they're saying, he stole the show in OTAs.
He's got all the potential in the world and a much better uniform number now. And
I'm not going to lie. I was like, yeah, number six, I'm over the Cutler thing. But really, every time I saw it, I couldn't get over it.
You couldn't get over it.
Thank God he's number 17.
Yeah, number
17. He's 17 in college, too. So
exactly.
Sense.
And I think he was in high school, too.
At Flathead
High School. Little shout out. Yep. So, but I think Brock can be a very good quarterback. Maybe he'll never be Peyton, but who the hell is? There's maybe
exactly.
been two guys in the history of time that have been Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And if he could just be, even just in the Joe Flacco category quarterback, your Super Bowl window is wide open. And
it
I
is.
Think he could easily be in the Joe Flacco territory mm-hmm. as far as if you just look at regular season production.
Yeah. And I think there will be a little bit of a hiccup after Peyton Manning's gone. But anytime you lose a Hall of Fame anything, you're going to have a little bit of a lull. However, I think with the amount of young talent we have on our roster, I don't think it's going to take us long to get back to where we want to be as far as a contender in the AFC.
No, I mean, you're not that far out. I think that drop-off between Manning and Osweiler, when that does happen, it'll be there.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to go from like a 12-4 season to say
4-12.
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that when Brock comes in, you're still at least 9-7, 10-6
mm-hmm.
with that same team, just because it would be his first year starting and there's a learning curve in that. Other than that, I don't see any reason why Brock can't take off from where Peyton is late in his career and just move the ball forward.
Well, and I know the preseason doesn't mean too much at all either, but we've said numerous times how we're going to bring in Brock and play him more in the preseason than pretty much anybody else.
Yeah.
Just to give him more game time reps, just to give him some live playing time. And I completely agree with this.
Takes the risk out of having Manning on the field.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Even though we will be going to that game, I want to see as much Peyton Manning as possible.
Sure.
I'm also looking forward to seeing Brock.
Oh, yeah. No, that's going to be one of the more exciting things,
exactly.
is watching Brock Osweiler in that game for sure.
And another thing about how we're kind of running our franchise that I'm fairly happy about as well is even though we bring in these kind of blockbuster deals, which I guess we kind of got Welker as a steal. We didn't have to pay him too much.
Well, Welker was ready to give the Patriots an FU.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Big time. We offered him the same thing. He just came with us.
Absolutely. It's like picking up that girl that just got dumped by her boyfriend that had no business getting dumped. Like, she's a 10, but she's real bitter. And so now her, like, standards are lower a little bit. Like, she's like, I'm just going to get me a man.
Are you saying the Broncos are a lower standard?
No. I'm just saying that
what
I may or may not have hooked up with a couple hot chicks only because they've been dumped by a really hot guy and they've had an ego bruise.
The trickle down.
Yeah, it's a trickle down effect. And that's how it worked with Wes Welker. He was spurned by the Patriots, franchise, all that nonsense. He was sick of it.
Yep.
And so, he's like, well, fuck you. I'll date this guy instead.
He was just over it. He was over the runaround because he got it the year before. They weren't sure if they wanted to bring him back, blah, 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 blah. He had an opportunity to go play with another Hall of Fame quarterback. He did it in Denver.
Why not?
A team who could contend right now also. Oh. I don't think he let, one of the things that he said was kind of funny to me is he said he was pretty much already over leaving New England. Whereas Tom Brady was like, yeah, I'm pretty upset about this. Wes Welker was just like, eh.
That's what she says too. Yeah. And all those girls.
I don't know if I really believe him there. They're not over it. Stung.
Oh yeah, it's
stung. But I'm glad he's going to use it for fuel this year.
Look, if Tom Brady for the last however many years he's been in the league has kept a chip on his shoulder about being picked in the sixth round, you better believe that more than 4 months only 4 months has passed, and Wes Welker still has a chip on his shoulder.
I think
about
his undraftedness got him through his NFL career to this point.
Yeah.
But New England kind of saying he's a disposable guy for a Danny Amendola.
Woo! Whiff.
Yeah, he's going to go out there like a tornado, man.
Big mistake, yeah.
But even with signing Peyton Manning, signing him, all these other contracts we have, we still have more cap room in our division than anyone else. We have still $10.6 million left in our cap space. So what this can kind of allow us to do going forward even into this season is sign a Ryan Clady, sign a Demaryius Thomas, sign an Eric Decker to an extension, make sure we got these guys for a long time.
Well, you were saying earlier today that you guys have how much in cap space right now?
$10.6 million in cap space.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's plenty of room.
Yeah, I mean, and it's
and
nice.
I think we'll use that going towards Clady. That's our main thing. You know what? We want to make sure that we can protect Peyton Manning these next couple years.
Sure.
And Brock Osweiler after that, going into the latter part
of his career. I've always said, I've said it 1,000 times on this podcast already, I like the big moolies. Like, those are the guys that you pay. You build from the inside out.
Games are won in the trenches.
They are absolutely won in the trenches. That will never, ever, ever change.
And it is a passing league, but you got to protect the pass, or otherwise you're not going to get shit.
That's exactly right.
How many times do you see Peyton Manning standing back there like a statue with all day to throw?
More than enough.
A lot.
Yeah.
He didn't take many hits at all.
So, the Clady contract, is he... Did you guys franchise him this year?
We did.
Okay. Yeah. So you can negotiate through the season on that, right? Or is that something you have to wait till the end of the season? I think it's something you have to wait till the end of the season.
I think you have to wait till the end of the season if you don't get something done by July something.
Oh, okay.
So
we don't get
something done by the month of July at some point. I can't remember the exact date. But yeah, then we'd have to completely wait until the very end of the season. But Ryan Clady wants to be in Denver. It's just a matter of plugging the numbers and getting the right one.
Sure. So, and we talked about this a little bit ago. You only have enough money under the cap space to sign maybe 5 big guys, 6 big guys, 7. I don't know what the number is yet. Yeah. I definitely want to research that in the future. But just kind of thinking in that 5 to 8 guys that you could afford to re-sign, is Ryan Clady one of those core guys that you want to give big money to?
Absolutely. He hasn't missed a start for the Denver Broncos, and he's considered one of the best left tackles in the game.
He's fucking
good. It's very fortunate that we have him as the Denver Broncos. And, of course, he came from Boise State, so I also like that. He's been a Bronco for years.
He's been in that orange and blue forever.
For almost a decade now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, when it comes down to all those contracts, Ryan Clady's absolutely a guy because, just like you said, you win games in the trenches, You really do.
Oh, yeah,
and to have a bunch of really talented guys up front, it's monumental for your run game and your pass game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just like I said, it's just one in the trenches. I mean, that's just the long and short of it. It really is.
And, speaking of passing game, it's kind of sounding like this is probably one of the last things I really think I want to address about the Broncos today is that it's sounding like we're going to keep 4 tight ends on the roster. So
it's a lot of tight ends.
It is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as I was talking about on the last podcast, Julius Thomas, a guy I'm super excited who I think he's going to be the breakout player for the Broncos this season.
Yeah.
It allows us to keep our 2 veterans and Tammy injuries in, but also keep the Virgil Green and the Julius Thomas who we drafted in the same exact year.
Right.
And these guys can learn from these 2 veterans that we have. And Jacob Tammy's drop rate was 0.0% last year.
Yeah,
no, the NFL.
Yeah, that was okay.
Yeah, so I like keeping all 4 of these guys. It comes down to a matter of injuries. Hope to God none of these guys go down. But playing time is going to be an issue at this point. So I want to really see where Julius Thomas ends up by week 8.
I want to give you a little cred on the Julius Thomas info. I mean, not only did you talk about it on the podcast, but the day after we recorded that, put it out, whose name was everywhere.
Julius Thomas's name was all over the internet the day after we talked about it. Yeah, I'm going to pat myself on the back on that one. But I've had my eye on him for a couple of years now, just kind of watching him to see how he progresses.
Yeah.
Finally, he's uninjured.
That's what a good stalker does.
And I'm probably the best at this point. So, yeah, four tight ends. I do agree with this. There was talk about us keeping six wide receivers.
Whoa.
Not going to happen. That number, to keep an extra tight end, I think we're going to sacrifice a receiver spot. But for that fourth receiver spot behind Demaryius Thomas, behind Eric Decker, behind Wes Welker, it's kind of looking like Greg Orton's kind of taking up that spot. Another guy that we've had around for a while. He got hurt last year in training camp.
Right.
Ended up on the practice squad. But he's a guy who they say just always gets open. So I think he'll be our number four guy. But we'll see come training camp.
That'll be interesting to watch. And the nice thing, too, is say you do keep the four tight ends and you keep lesser number of receivers.
Mm-hmm.
With that cap space that you guys have, that gives you some wiggle room. So if a guy goes down with injury at any point during the season, you can just simply give a guy a call, you know? Like even a T.O. at that point, or a Chad Ochocinco.
You never know. Donald Driver said he'd come back and play for the Packers. I bet we could get him to come play for
the Packers. Yeah, I'm thinking there's got to be a couple veteran wide receivers that definitely have some game left in them. I don't know that T.O. or Ochocinco do. But there's got to be a couple guys out there that, you know, if a guy went down, you give him a call, you could bring him in, and you'd be okay. And
even early on in the year, if you have some of these stacked NFL teams where they really are pretty deep at wide receiver and they have to let a guy go in training camp, in those first couple weeks, if he's not already taken, then you have access to some of those talented
wide receivers. Sure, I mean, you could easily bring back a Stokely.
Yeah, I would definitely be okay with that.
Absolutely.
I love Brandon Stokely.
Yeah, he's got Tim Duncan game. Like, it doesn't matter.
He's going to old man ball that shit till the day he dies.
How old he gets, it does not matter. He'll be able to play that game forever.
I think he'll be 37 this year, too.
Nice. Shout out to the old dudes getting it done. I like that. Makes me feel good.
37's not even old. That makes me feel crazy. Good.
Well, one of the things that we were going to do today, Jared, was not only go over kind of some of the more recent news, but do a little state of the West.
Yeah.
Whether that's AFC or the
NFC.
Both
the Wests.
All the Wests. So we're going to start with the AFC West, basically just kind of break down each team in each of our divisions.
Exactly.
And also what I want to do is let's rank them, you know, 1 through 4, but let's read them off in reverse order.
Okay. So the team that I think is going to be last in the division, that's the one I should start with.
Yeah. So basically the way that I was looking at it was, the teams, like, that you fear the least, the next.
Okay.
And kind of bust it down. So, in the division, in the AFC West, the mighty AFC West.
It's getting better.
You guys are going to run away with it.
Well, of course.
But, out of those four teams, which one do you, or three other teams,
okay,
which one of those do you fear the least?
I would say I fear the Raiders the least. And this is for a couple of reasons.
But not for your physical safety, per se. just in a football game.
I would get stabbed if I went there.
Yeah, like at the Coliseum, those would be the team you'd fear the most.
Right after they clean up their sewage leak.
That's all right, because when you get shivved, you just get a little sewage in there, so it festers too. So it's like a poison dart.
It'll be a quicker death.
And you want to die as fast as possible.
Come on, Oakland, get a new stadium.
If you're spending time in Oakland, you want to die as fast as possible. Like, get it over with.
But the reason I fear them the least is because they've had a serious overhaul this offseason. I hate the Raiders, of course. I mean,
who doesn't?
Every Broncos fan
fuck
hates
the Raiders.
I do think that they had the most underrated offseason in the NFL, though.
Really?
As far as what they did. And I'll tell you, I think Reggie McKenzie's doing a great job as their general manager.
Okay, Reggie McKenzie does have a good pedigree. And he's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he still has one of the Davises in charge of his shit. Al Davis' son. If you have not seen his picture, I think it's Mark Davis, correct? If you have not seen a picture of Mark Davis, go to A Flock of Donkeys on Facebook. Look us up there. There is a posting on there. It shows a picture. Yeah. He either looks like a retard.
I think the Crypt Keeper was mad that they actually let him go for a second just to watch a fucking game.
He could easily be a Bond villain. Like,
definitely a Bond villain. He looks like a Bond villain that no physical attributes whatsoever as a villain.
He's definitely
just a creeper.
I mean, there's no doubt he's inbred. So he still has that. Like, he's still running this franchise.
Who knows what Al Davis was doing back in the day.
I feel a little bad for Reggie McKenzie because he's still dealing with the crazy Davis ownership.
A Davis?
Yeah. And in fact, it could easily just be Al Davis who transferred his spirit into young Davis's body.
Doesn't that what it looks like?
It does.
I mean, it'll be another 5 years before he's got a Band-Aid on the side of his face.
That
Kim Newton.
That son looks like something that came out of a Petri dish. He could easily be a clone that they just implanted Al Davis's soul.
Yeah,
into.
Get on Facebook on the Flock of Donkeys. That's a picture you've got to see. It's hysterical.
It's pretty good.
Adam came up with that one. It wasn't even me coming up with that one. So you got to give him credit.
It was just
there.
Funny to watch. So
some of the things that he's done, he's gotten rid of a lot of these contracts that were just ridiculous. That were, of course, a product of the Davis regime.
They had some bad ones.
They got rid of Rolando McClain.
Darius who retired. Hayward,
yeah, eventually then retired. Yeah, at what, 23 years old or some shit. So Rolando McClain, Darius Hayward Bay, Michael Huff, Tommy Kelly, Stanford Rout, Michael Bush, got rid of all these guys, cleaned house. What this really does, it gets rid of a lot of head cases from your locker room.
Absolutely.
And by 2014, they could potentially have $50 million in cap space.
Ooh,
yeah.
So that's a lot.
I don't fear them this year. I think they're going to – but with their strength of schedule, I think the Raiders could easily become a 500 team this season. But I think the Chargers are going to be like a 9-17 just because they have an easier schedule. So sure. I don't fear them very much at all this year. But I think in the future, they're definitely in the right direction, especially now that they drafted Tyler Wilson, who they're hoping is a franchise quarterback down the road. He had good OTAs. They also got Matt Flynn and Earl Pryor. Which doesn't fucking matter.
Now, Matt Flynn, you know, obviously he was in Seattle for a while.
You're big on Matt Flynn. You know a lot about him.
You know, I think he could be good in the right system. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's hard to say. But with that said, apparently there was a writer, a national writer, that said, watched some of the OTA practices the other day and said that was the worst quarterbacking performance he had ever seen in the history of the NFL during some of their OTAs between the whole quarterback room.
Wow.
So
unbelievable.
I don't know. I mean, Matt Flynn did lose his job to a third round rookie.
But it was a third round Russell Wilson.
Well,
not to be understated.
He is magical.
Who it was.
Yeah. But
another thing on what you're talking about, like as far as the quarterback competition right now in Oakland, this is a team where these guys all just met each other.
That's true.
They have no clue what's going on out there. Their receiving core is depleted. They signed Josh Cribbs, but that's mainly a special teams band-aid. Yeah. I like Josh Cribbs. I think he's good. He's not a number one or even a number two receiver in my eyes.
Who's the Raiders coach again this year?
Dennis Allen.
Oh, right. Okay. I knew it was one of the former Broncos.
Mike McCoy is down in San Diego.
But it's not. It's Dennis Allen. Mm-hmm. And this is year two of the Dennis Allen regime, correct?
Yeah. So their defense should be a little bit better. I know they got rid of a lot of guys. They still have some questions.
They got rid of a bunch of guys that were riding on just their name.
And they were completely overpaid.
Michael Huff might be one. Richard Seymour might be another.
Yep.
So, anyway. Yeah.
And they also cleared up a lot of space by letting the ghost of Carson Palmer go to Arizona, to your division.
Yeah.
So that was also a good thing for them because I think Matt Flynn is an upgrade. Tyler Wilson, I don't know too much about him, to be honest.
No clue.
But they said he's pretty good, and that's why they drafted him.
Gotcha.
They also signed – well, one of the positions of concern was going to end up being corner. They're depleted there. So they got Tracy Porter, Mike Jenkins. Tracy Porter's not bad. He just got, you know, he had those seizure problems last year. I was, I did feel bad for him. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a good player.
Right.
But he also did get beat out by a Chris Harris and a Tony Carter. We just had those random guys that just lucked out for us, and all of a sudden we got talent there. So,
well, if there's one player in the league that knows how to take a stiff arm, it's Tracy Porter. Just ask Marshawn.
Oh, man. Yeah. That was a bad one.
Beastquake. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it was a solid offseason for the Raiders. You got to give him that. Reggie McKenzie doing the best he can under the disembodied spirit.
Under what he has to work
with. Re-embodied spirit of Al Davis.
It kind of feels like he was brought in to just kind of take over. They're finally like, all right, the Davises just aren't getting it done. Let's just bring in a guy and hand him the reins. And they also drafted DJ Hayden, a great corner, who's probably going to add some depth to that position also. So I think they got better in a lot of places, especially with their salary cap issues.
Yeah.
You know, they brought in linebacker from Chicago who's been learning under Brian Urlacher, Nick Roach. I don't really know how great he's going to be, but I think he's consistent, and he's a smart football player, so he's going to limit the mistakes there, especially against the run game.
Nick Roach is a very solid football player.
Yeah.
I really like him. So it'll be interesting that was number four. Does. Who's number three on your list in the AFC West, Jared?
Number three?
That was a bad drum roll. Because I had a beer in one hand.
Number three is definitely... Definitely San Diego. I think the Chiefs are going to be number two in the division because they short up the quarterback position, what's been plaguing them for a long time. They do have some talent, you know, albeit overrated talent, I think. You know, Eric Berry, too bad that knee injury happened because I think he could have been really, really good. But, you know, he did lose a step, and he took a pretty bad hit on it last year too. So
yeah, in the preseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. So I think the Chiefs are going to be number two just because of the coaching. Andy Reid's a good coach. Don't count him out. And when you're playing against the Broncos, the Chargers, well, not the Chiefs. And Oakland, I think the Chiefs are going to beat Oakland and San Diego all the games. Andy Reid's not going to lose those games with the talent that he has on his roster.
I wouldn't think so. So back to the Chargers then. Mm-hmm. So this is year one under Mike McCoy, correct? You guys' his former offensive coordinator.
Yep.
And, you know, a bright mind by all means. I mean, this is a guy that took Tebow when McDaniels was there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
got creative.
Recreated the offense and won a playoff game with Tim Tebow. Like, let that wash over you for a second.
Been washing still.
Yeah, with a guy that can't throw, Mike McCoy's offense was able to generate enough points to win a playoff game against the vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well,
you know?
This is one of the things that you've been mentioning for a long time is why not give Tim Tebow a chance? Because when all these all these defenses are geared to stop the pass, why not just go heavy run? Who the hell is going to stop that?
Well, yeah, because all the personnel moves that are made out there, especially on defense, are geared towards stopping the pass. So the guys are getting a little smaller, a little faster, you know, overall. I mean, you look at D linemen today, and, you know, they're longer, leaner guys overall than they were, say, 10 years ago. And, you know, because they were geared to stop the run. So if you actually committed to a power run game when your quarterback's a power runner too, and you just jellied it down people's throats, like that,
I think it would be effective.
I think it'd be effective.
I thought the best, this is going to get a little sidetracked, I thought the best fit for Tim Tebow would have been the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh,
do you think that Packers defense is going to stop a run-heavy offense? Not in a million years, man. The Packers are going to get carved up again on D.
Honestly, if you ask me right now if I want a Christian Ponder or Tim Tebow
to be my
quarterback?
I'd take Tim Tebow.
I would absolutely take Tim Tebow.
You know, Christian Ponder's shown some glimpses, but holy shit,
he just starts
sucking.
Scapula's set the wrong spot.
Yeah, thanks, Trent Dilfer.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not big on Ponder, but would have been
I think it would have been good. But I think San Diego's record is going to end up being 9-7 because of their easy schedule. So I think they finish a game above Oakland. That's really why.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as their offseason has gone, I mean, what did they do to really get better? I mean,
us their good players.
Yeah, I mean, you're Chargers East now. Yeah, much like we're Vikings West.
Yeah, God, I hate that. We grabbed a couple of players. And Jacob Hester, thank you for him also. What the hell is wrong with you, San Diego?
They don't know.
What a utility player. What an asset.
They're at the beach. They don't care.
God.
Yeah. I don't know. So that and then the drafting of Manti Te'o, we've been over that before.
Oh, God. I'm so happy he went to San Diego. I just can't wait to hand him his ass.
Yeah, that's a disaster waiting to happen.
It's a complete disaster.
I mean, there's no way he's going to be a productive player in the NFL.
Yeah.
He is a Brian Bosworth type to me.
Absolutely.
Where he comes in with all this hype, all this production.
And then gets run over by Bo Jackson.
And then gets run the fuck over by Bo Jackson. And then he doesn't even stop. He just runs right down the tunnel of the kingdom. Like, he can't even stop.
Well, I've also said this a million times. I could very easily be wrong in my AFC West predictions as far as the bottom three teams, because I don't think Phillip Rivers is done. He's had Norv freaking Turner for how long? Surviving Norv annually? That's what he's been doing for years now.
He really has.
Give him some assets. Give him a coach.
Well,
see what he can do.
And think about it. If Mike McCoy can get to the playoffs and win a playoff game with Tim Tebow as a quarterback, don't you think that the Chargers will have a much better record with a Phillip Rivers at quarterback?
It should be, because, Phillip Rivers is still a good quarterback. Even though he can't throw a lick outside the pocket.
I mean, you and I have seen him several times.
If he's on the move, he's throwing the ball straight into the dirt or just way off target. He's a pocket guy. And on the offensive line, I don't feel that they did enough to shore up his protection.
Not at all.
So I think when you have these fast pass rushers coming from the outside, especially when we move Derek Wolfe and then have Sean Phillips, Von Miller, Quanterre Smith when he gets healthy. I think we're going to flush him out of the pocket. He's going to be
so playing the Chargers this year, both home and away. How many games? You know, what's the win-loss ratio there
for us?
Yeah,
oh, we're winning both those games.
Okay,
The only thing that I would be worried about, and most Bronco fans are, I think, can really level with me here, is going to Arrowhead. Going to Arrowhead's always a bitch, just always. And now that you have Andy Reid, Alex Smith, potentially Chase Daniels, you have somewhat weapons. I think Dwayne Bowe is going to be better with Andy Reid.
So that brings us to your number two team in the AFC West, obviously.
I think it's the Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
I think it's the Chiefs.
All those guys that you mentioned there, whether it's Alex Smith or Andy Reid, or You know how I feel about Chase Daniels, and we'll get into that in a second. But
your number two man crush?
I love me a midget quarterback. There's really no other way to put it. But you look at that team, and there is some talent there. I mean, Dexter McCluster could be a very good slot receiver if used correctly.
I hope, and I think Andy Reid will use him correctly.
I think Tony Moiaki is a great receiving tight end.
Way to get that name off your tongue, man.
I know, I just ripped that right off. Yeah, Moiaki'd you right there. So, yeah, I mean, I think he could be, a very good pass-catching tight end. I think Dwayne Bowe is one of those guys that's highly overrated, always have. I think he's nothing more than a slightly above-average wide receiver. But yeah, he's fine.
Well, see, this is, you and I have disagreed on Dwayne Bowe because I've seen him do some really good things. I think he's a product of having Matt Cassel as a quarterback.
Maybe.
Matt Cassel sucked. Still does.
I'm just not sold on Dwayne Bowe at all. Yeah. I haven't seen him do anything with any consistency to make me believe that he is even a top 20 receiver in this league.
Well, I think even if, regardless of who's right here, I still think he's going to be ineffective this year because Alex Smith doesn't use his receivers much. He's a tight end quarterback, very much a tight end quarterback.
I mean, I think his middle name is Charlie, or it must be because he's a check down Charlie.
He is.
That's what he does.
And he'll hit his tight ends left and right. Of course, he had Vernon Davis to throw to for a while, which is good.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to use Dwayne Bowe that much.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at Andy Reid offense, it's a West Coast offense.
Mm-hmm.
You're hitting a lot of backs. You're hitting a lot of tight ends.
Yeah.
You're hitting a lot of slot receivers.
Exactly.
So, I don't see Dwayne Bowe having a monster season with an Alex Smith. But if they did put in a Chase Daniels,
it would be interesting because he does use his receivers.
He throws a nice long ball. This guy has touch. He has anticipation. Yeah. He may not have the strongest arm
in
the world.
He's like a good Chad Pennington, though.
But he sat and learned behind Drew Brees for how long? Like three, four years?
Yeah, I think it was four.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's smart.
He understands an offense.
I know they're going to go with Alex Smith, but if he struggles at any point during this season,
it's going to be over.
I would not hesitate to put Chase Daniels in. And honestly, at the end of the day, if you're looking at long term for the Chiefs franchise, I think that's a better move
Chase Daniels.
For them.
Yeah, because look at how much Alex Smith struggled when he would have a different offensive coordinator every single year.
Absolutely.
And I know that's tough on any kind of quarterback.
Yeah.
But Chase Daniels learned basically under one offensive system. If Andy Reid is smart, which he is, and he understands that, he could cater to a Chase Daniels who already knows the system, uses strengths, and I think Chase Daniels might be a lot better.
The Chase Daniels system, that system that he played in New Orleans under Sean Payton was a pass-happy attack.
Just spread it out and go all over the place.
I know Andy Reid can work with somebody who runs a pass-happy attack.
Andy Reid's my biggest concern in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's one of those, that's how I always judge an offseason signing.
The coaching staff?
If you look at that signing, you go, oh, I don't like that they signed him. Or, oh, that's good. I'm glad they drafted Manti Te'o. Fantastic. Well done. You sign Andy Reid as your head coach?
You're worried.
I don't like that.
I hate going to Arrowhead anyway because it's always a tough game now that they have a coach.
Yeah.
The Mike McCoy thing down to San Diego, I'm not concerned about that at all because I know what he did for the Broncos. I know he's smart and I know he's creative. Yeah. But we were about to push him out the door anyways to give Adam Gase this job. It's like we've just been sitting on Adam Gase waiting for him to get this position. Peyton Manning was so excited about it, too. Everybody's been ready for this. I think Mike McCoy was gone anyways.
I honestly felt that same way about the Dennis Allen thing, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Now
we got jacked up.
I'm not saying they're not solid coaches, but as a head coach, you don't look at that and go, oh, yeah, they're going to be amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
My only hope is that Jack Del Rio doesn't find a job in this fucking division somewhere else, too.
No, if we can find a way to put Jack Del Rio and Tom Cable in witness protection so that no other teams could talk to them over the next, 5 years.
If we can't have him, nobody can.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I guess one more thing, and I'm going to ask you about this, too, because I really have no idea. With the Raiders offseason, it's been a really good offseason for them. They have a lot of promise with a lot of cap room. They showed up a lot of space.
Yeah.
Going into the future with these teams, as far as the other three teams in the AFC West, going into the future, who do I fear the most? Definitely not San Diego. I think they're a long ways away, even with Phillip Rivers, because he's at the tail end of his career. If you don't bring in people now, it's going to be a struggling process. I don't see San Diego being that competitive in the next 5 years. But I don't know who I'm worried about more, Reggie McKenzie being in Oakland doing all the stuff that he's doing or having Andy Reid at Arrowhead Stadium. I don't know which of those two teams I think I'm going to fear more in 5 years. I think Oakland's doing well.
I would say Kansas City only because they do have young talent there.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid is a coach that's proven that he can win year after year after year after year. Their ownership group is far less dysfunctional.
That's true.
You know,
and they have far less to overcome, too. That's true.
Absolutely. And, you know, their whole franchise has a lot more support from the fans, a lot more patience. The Raiders are just... They're a dumpster fire, and I know they're working on it.
A dumpster fire. But with their $50 million in cap room, I think they could bring in a crucial veteran next year and really compete with the Chiefs, so I think they could maybe be neck and neck the next year.
You know, that's always one of those things. Everybody touts cap room and, you know, how, oh, we've got so much cap room, we'll improve the team. Well, that's great. You can have all the cap room in the world, but if those guys don't want to come and play for you.
That's true.
I mean, you tell me what big free agent's going to want to come and play in Oakland. I wouldn't.
That's a really good point.
I mean, I mean, Randy Moss did it once, right?
Yeah, that's
that worked out real well for him. Yeah, exactly. So it makes no sense.
Arrowhead is a more stable franchise, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see what Reggie McKenzie brings, especially with that cap room, because a lot of players I think are going to want to play for him.
Yeah.
But it's still Oakland. It's still the fucking shithole of the NFL.
Oh, the shithole.
The black shithole, which is literally a shithole now with the sewage problem.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
totally. Yeah, it all fits.
Fuck you, Oakland Raiders.
Well, on that note, I think we got through everything that we want to talk about. Yeah. I like your rankings. So just to recap quickly, number one, obviously the Broncos and the AFC West. I think everybody in the world would agree on that.
Yeah.
Number two, the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas I like City that Chiefs. Pick. Number three,
Chargers.
San Diego Chargers. Mm-hmm. Number four.
But not by much. Number four, the Raiders.
Number four, the Raiders. So we're going to wrap up here with the donkey spit. We're going to drink us some more Black Star.
Yeah.
After we do that, after we're done with this, we're going to review the beer that we're drinking. After that, we'll do Chicken Scratch to join us. If you haven't been drinking to this point, you are definitely not on the same level.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to enjoy this as much as we are.
At all. All right, catch up, folks. All righty, we're back here. Going to do our little beer review. This is the beer we've been drinking today. It's the Black Star Lager, triple hopped for your enjoyment.
It's actually got some flavor to it.
From the Black Star Brewing Company.
It's very inexpensive, too.
Exactly. And that's kind of the reason we wanted to bring this beer up today was... You need an alternative to the Miller Lights, the Coors, the Budweiser, you know, those American lagers.
Yeah, when you want to kind of get out of those huge brewing companies that have their dirty little hands in politics and all sorts of other shit, when you're looking for an alternative, that's actually why we discovered this. Well, you discovered this beer. You're like, hey, check this one out. I was like, this is the domestic beer that we've been looking
Absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. $5.49 here in Montana for a six-pack.
And it's good.
And it's actually tasty lager. So for a good just drinking beer... I highly recommend it.
Yep.
And, you know, the reason why we decided to go that way was we had watched a documentary, Beer Wars. Highly recommended. You learn how evil the big three breweries are. Fuck you, Anheuser-Busch. We'll probably never have you as a sponsor, so it probably is not going to be
probably. That's a for sure thing.
Well, it depends on how much money. I will sell out.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
But anyways, the big three didn't like them, didn't want to buy from them. Nope. So... Went over next door, saw the Black Star. It's a beer that I had known from my childhood since it's right next to...
Because you started drinking at age three.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was an angry drunk when I was young. So that was kind of awkward. And you know, it's something I recognized. I'd actually met the owner a couple times. Name's Minot. Good guy. We watched the documentary. We see the beer has come back out because it was off the shelves for a few years.
You had to stop brewing it for a while.
Email the... You know, Black Star that night.
At like midnight. We'd already been half-tuned.
Just hammered. Saying we liked the beer. Wanted to know if Minot still owned the brewery. If, you know, if it's still independently owned. Because we didn't want to, you know, sponsor the big three breweries. And, 20 minutes later, we had an email back from Minot saying that he was glad we were enjoying the beer.
Yeah, just thrilled we were drinking it.
The whole nine. And, awesome guy, awesome company.
Brewery, good beer.
Good beer for
They have other beers too that, you know, in the future we may review. But yeah, Black Star Lager. Check it out.
Check it out, folks. All right, we'll be right back with Chicken Scratch. Stay tuned. All right, everybody, we're back here with the Chicken Scratch segment of the show, the good section.
The second best.
Yeah, they're the best. And we're going to go through and we'll do our, you know, State of the West.
Do you want to do that first? What do you want
to
start?
No, I want to finish with that because fired up, Jared.
I think I know why.
I'm so fired up.
I'm not a Seahawks fan, but I was a little bit pissed off about this whole article that came out too.
So
I do watch the NFL.
The article Jared is referring to is an article on ESPN.com written by Jeffrey Chahida. I think that's how you say his last
Chidusha.
Name. Chidusha.
Definitely. Fuck.
Chidusha. God. basically calling into question whether Russell Wilson could ever be a great quarterback.
Yeah.
And, you know, he goes through a lot of different things in the article. You know, probably his biggest argument is Russell wasn't asked to do as much as the other quarterbacks, and therefore you couldn't tell if he was going to be, you know, all that great or not. He never carried the team. Compared him a lot to Alex Smith because their stats are comparable in the
even
time that
though
they,
they don't play similarly in any way, I don't think.
No, their game is completely different. Yeah. So I wanted to start to debunk Mr. Chihita's argument here just right out of the gate. And starting with that, he's saying, well, Russell Wilson didn't have to do as much as an RG3, as a Colin Kaepernick, as an Andrew Luck. All right, that argument only holds up for one player out of that group, of those three, and that's Andrew Luck. I'm not going to sit here and debate with somebody whether Andrew Luck had to do more in his system than Russell Wilson. He did, and that's fine. We'll put him aside. Yep. And the thing is, I have no problem saying Andrew Luck is going to be a great quarterback in this league.
Absolutely. He was polished coming out of college, and I think he did a really good job, and I think he progressed throughout the entire season very steadily, just as they thought he would.
So, you know, that argument, whatever, that's fine. So that leaves us with the two other guys that people are comparing Russell with and saying that he didn't have to do as much.
Mm-hmm.
It's RG3 and Kaepernick. Now, if you look, okay, how much did they actually have to do? If you look at dropbacks per game over their starts last year, guess who's number 30th in the NFL?
Dropbacks per game.
Per game.
I would have to say Seattle, right?
It's Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay.
With 31.4.
Who also had a killer running game?
He absolutely had a killer running game, which we're going to get to in a second. Number two, or number 31, right behind him, is RG3 with 30.9 dropbacks per game. Hmm. Okay? Two stops behind that, number 33, Russell Wilson with 29.8. So you're telling me there's a gigantic difference in the amount that a quarterback is asked to do between 29.8 dropbacks and 31.4?
Two per game,
A drop back and a half per game?
Yeah, that's not that much of a difference.
It's a ludicrous argument. So just because you look at the stats and the yardage stats are a little bit lower, that doesn't mean that a guy didn't put his team on his back.
That's true.
And we'll get to that because I believe that carrying a team has very little to do with your stats and all to do with your clutch and how and what you do when the team asks you
well,
to take that.
You look at the game-winning drives, the two pretty much that he had against the Bears, the one that he had against the Falcons, which your defense just couldn't hold up, those were very impressive to me.
Absolutely.
And in the article, he continued to call him a game manager. Like we talked about before, game managers do not win you games, and they don't give you those game-winning drives, as Russell Wilson proved that he could do.
So we called
numerous times.
We called the game-winning drive the stat, because they always put it up. If there's two minutes left in the game, and it's a close game, they'll always put up the stat. How many game-winning drives?
Game-winning or game-tying drive.
In their career.
Under 2 minutes of the fourth quarter,
exactly. Russell Wilson had 5 game-winning drives in his first season. That's two. That doesn't count his second one in the Chicago game. That doesn't count him putting the Hawks up in the Miami game late. That doesn't count him putting them on the goal line in the Arizona game, first game of his career, and putting it right on Braylon Edwards' fucking hands, and he just can't haul it in. Well, that's not counting the Falcons game either.
Well, and then you think about the Redskins game when you guys were down 14 early on.
Absolutely.
And he came back. He kept his composure. RG3 got beat up. Here's another thing that I hated about the article. I mean, right off the bat, I hated the title. Doesn't think he'll ever be an elite quarterback. Let's just, he's fishing for something to jump to a conclusion so he can make an argument and kind of buy up media time here in this offseason.
Right.
But when you think about how smart these players are, I think he's actually ahead of RG3 just because of the way he plays. He doesn't take the hits that RG3 does.
No.
So who's the better quarterback at this point? I put Russell Wilson above it because he understands how you can just get lit up and end your career in the NFL. And he's not going to do that. RG3 killed himself last year.
He plays the game more under control. Russell Wilson does.
Yeah, he does.
And that's not a knock on RG3. I think he's an exceptional talent. I really
enjoy watching RG3 play.
I think he'll be an excellent, excellent quarterback going forward.
But he's
going
to have to learn
guy.
How to not take those hits.
If he can, exactly, learn to not take those hits. You turn on a YouTube video of Robert Griffin highlights, I swear to you, the first one I pulled up,
he's getting lit up.
He was getting just lit the fuck up in 8 or so different instances. And Russell maybe took one hit like that the entire season. He just doesn't take hits.
And I'm not going to, you're going to take hits as a quarterback all throughout the season. You can't avoid them all. But he's going to take a lot less than RG3 is going to take.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you look back at that, oh, well, their team asked them to do more argument. We talked about how many dropbacks per game that each quarterback had. They're damn near identical.
Yeah.
You look at the rushing offenses in the league. Guess who was number one? It wasn't the Seahawks. It was the Washington Redskins.
Who in Morris, they got a pretty good running back.
They've got an amazing running back. Who
awesome.
Had more, who was the second leading rusher in the NFL. So if you want to say that Russell Wilson had all this help that these other guys didn't, you're full of shit. Just look
at that. And San Francisco had a really good defense, too. They still have a shutdown defense.
Absolutely.
Kaepernick was, of course, milking that.
San Francisco was number four in the league in rushing offense. Seattle was number three. Mm-hmm. So they all had similar rushing attack help. You can't blame it on that. Mm-hmm. They were all asked to put the ball in the air about the same amount of times.
Quarterbacks win games when they got a good run game. Look what happened with John Elway when we got that good run game.
Absolutely.
Won Super Bowls. You can't blame him for having a good team.
And the Redskins had a decent defense. They weren't an elite defense,
but they were
at least middle of the pack. They were a playoff caliber defense. So, honestly,
fix your turf, Washington. That's a fucking joke.
Oh, God, that's such a debacle. But I just think the argument's absolute bunk when they say, you know, Russell didn't have to do nearly as much. And he didn't at the beginning of the year because they didn't let him.
Yeah.
And on top of that, why do you think they handcuffed him during the beginning of the season compared to an RG3 or an Andrew Luck? You bet he's a rookie. But the other thing is he only took a third of the reps all through training camp, all through OTAs.
Yeah, so
he just
didn't have the experience or the rapport with some of his teammates.
Think
about how
much more prepared an RG3 was going into the season. How much more prepared an Andrew
or
Luck
an Andrew
was.
Luck when you're the one who's being thrown in on all the first team reps.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, Jeffrey is a big stat guy, and he didn't really watch a lot of the games. So if you want to look at this on a statistical level as to what greatness is the number four QB ranking in the league, in the upper echelons of quarterbacks, 100 rating, is that the mark of a great QB? I think it is. How about being number eight in total QBR? How about tying
that's
the
why
rookie
I don't, that's why I don't
record.
Like stats. Like, I just don't give a shit about stats. Because if you watch the game, the stats don't always say what happened in the game.
It doesn't.
And so, I mean, we can sit here and get worked up about all the stats that this dude came up with, but they don't really tell the story very much.
Well, those are stats that, to me, prove that Russell Wilson is a great quarterback right now.
Yeah, well, the issue with this whole article that I had is he kept calling him a game manager. He's got a great running game and a defense and all this other shit to lean on. What he's not talking about, and he didn't even mention, which blows my mind, is with all the Seahawks games that we watched and then rewatched last year, you're seeing Russell Wilson on the run throw some of these 20-yard outs just on a dime. I know he overthrew some seam routes last year, but he was still getting to know the receivers. He was still developing that timing. He's got plenty of arm strength. He's really accurate as far as running outs and hitches and slants, all these types of patterns. So the one thing he never talked about was Russell Wilson's ability to make all the throws on the field, which we definitely saw him do last year.
And not only that, but in a radio interview the next day, Chiquita was saying that from NFL scouts that he respected, that they said that Russell was limited physically, didn't have that strong of an arm, didn't stand out. He was just a guy athletically, is what Chiquita was trying to say.
It must be tough to have somebody say you don't have that strong of an arm when you have a fucking cannon.
He's got a hose. I mean, I'm sorry. Just turn
on
the tape.
He's got a gun.
Just turn on the tape. I mean, it's all you got to do.
He's got a bigger hand than Brock Osweiler.
And to sit there and say that he has no room to become great because they ask him to do less is because they run the ball more is absolutely ridiculous.
Did
Tom Brady come in and start throwing the spread offense out there, throwing up 350 yards
a
game?
Now, he was a game manager when he first came in.
When was Tom Brady great? Oh, I know. The first year he played and he was down, it was tied 17-17 with a minute 30 left in Super Bowl 35.
Yeah.
He drove him from the 17-yard line into field goal range.
Because game managers don't do you that.
They don't do that. That is the clutch factor. That is what separates the elite quarterbacks from that second tier down.
So, just from firsthand experience with a game manager, Kyle Orton threw a lot of yards when he was under Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
A lot of this dink and dunk offense. He, between the 20s, he was great.
Yeah.
But did he ever put you in position to win the game in the end of the game? Did he ever give you that game-winning drive? Not a single time.
Look at Tavares Jackson, the year that he started.
Yeah.
You know, a game manager. Was he a solid guy? Can he get you 8-8? Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
But when it comes down to it and the team looks at you and says, we kind of fucked this whole game up.
We need you to win a game.
We need you to win the game.
Game managers don't do that. Russell Wilson did it numerous times, which completely illegitimizes his whole argument,
in
my opinion.
Because I feel like when you look at who the great quarterbacks are in the league, What separates the great ones? Absolutely. Or even just, you know, our current quarterbacks right now.
Uh-huh.
Between the great ones and that next tier down, the very good ones, it's the guys that can get... Tony Romo is a very good quarterback, but he can't get it done in the clutch.
Nope. So he's not that elite. The Pennington class. The really smart guys, yeah. You know, a lot of anticipation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a good player.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they just can't do it. Russell has the clutch gene.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the end of the argument.
Well, and that whole Jim Rome art, you know, when he was on talking about Russell Wilson, I don't, you know, I hate Jim Rome. Fuck
you
it.
Do.
But when he came in and said, you know, Russell Wilson has it, whatever it is, he's got it all over him.
Yeah.
You can see when he plays the game of football, he never panics. Well, it's because he's a robot, too.
He is a robot. Robots don't panic.
And yeah. That's just who he is, though. So. The whole game manager argument, I just hate this article in every way. Fuck this article.
Yeah, it's not comparative to Alex Smith. Like, they're not even close to the same quarterback.
No. Not taking anything away from Alex Smith. I think Alex Smith is good. He was a late bloomer at a lot of offensive coordinators. We talked about that.
But I would equivocate a Matt Flynn and Alex Smith a lot more than Russell Wilson. They're a lot Wilson of the same players.
Yeah.
So, anyways, there's my rant on Jeffrey Shahida. Go fuck yourself, dude. You don't know what the fuck
terrible
you're saying.
Terrible article. And I'm not even a Seahawks fan, and I was blown away that all this shit even came out. Because he just doesn't have a solid backing for what he was trying to get across in the article.
He doesn't. And basically stupid. What it boils down to is he looked at just a bunch of stats, especially the beginning of the year stats, saw low yardage totals, didn't watch any of those fucking games, I guarantee it.
Well, you guys didn't even take the reins off until what, like week 9 or 10?
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
then started loosely doing it. You didn't even do it right away. You
absolutely.
Know, you wanted him to be a game manager in the beginning of the season just because, you had this good defense. You have a good run game.
Right.
Even though your defense wasn't proven yet, and you guys knew that your defense was good, but the rest of the NFL didn't. So you wanted him to come in and be efficient, to throw for 175 yards on 15 of 18 passing.
Right.
But then when you realize that Russell Wilson could pretty much make any throw on the field.
Yeah.
Fuck this.
Well, and in game 6 of the year, when we needed it, they turned it over to him, and he throws a bomb on Tom Brady and, you know, beats the Patriots. So... I don't know. I think you proved it all year long. I think if you see it any other way, you clearly just don't know fucking football. And I don't know how you write for a national news publication.
Exactly. And be taken seriously.
I don't
know a single Seahawks fan or anybody who actually pays attention to the NFC West that doesn't think that Russell Wilson is a complete legitimate quarterback who has potential to be elite. I'm not going to say he is because you never know. It's up to them. So you really never know if they're going to be elite. You know, I'd like Brock Osweiler to be, but I don't know that yet. I think he's got so much upside that it's potentially going to happen.
I think he played at an elite level for the last 5 to 6 weeks of the year. I think you can absolutely say that. Has he done it for a full season yet? No. And that's fine.
But it's his rookie year.
Yeah. I mean, what else does a guy got to do? So that's the end of my rant on fucking Shahida. Go fuck yourself, dude. So moving on to the state of the West.
Okay.
And the NFC West.
This. I know there's one team that we both have talked about. It's just that really does scare you.
Yeah, I'm legitimately worried.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that because, again, we'll go in reverse order. My number 4 team in the division, much like everybody else, is the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
And there's a few reasons for that. But number 1, the biggest reason for me is they bring in Bruce Arians to be their head coach.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in Carson Palmer to be their quarterback. And
who's also a guy who's good between the 20s.
When he has protection.
Yeah.
And that...
He'll throw for a crap load of yards. Every season he'll do that.
When he has protection. Mm-hmm. And
there's none in Arizona.
And there is no protection in Arizona. They do get Levi Brown back from injury. That's fine. But, you know, and they drafted some kid that's going to play right tackle. But that offensive line was abysmal last year. And especially in a Bruce Arians offense where... Everything is down the field. Look at Andrew Luck and Ben Roethlisberger. They throw those bombs you know, almost all game long.
That's true.
You got to have good pass protection to set up enough time so the quarterback can take a 7-step drop, set his feet, and make a throw. And I don't think that the Arizona Cardinals offensive line can hold up.
Well, to me, this is the same story of when the Chicago Bears brought in Mike Martz.
Mm.
They had to completely change that offense because you have those deep routes, you know, the greatest show on turf, all these deep 7-step drop routes. And it just wasn't working because Cutler couldn't handle it because there was no offensive line protection.
No,
I think it's going to be the same story. I think it's going to be halfway through the season until they realize they got to go 3-step or bust.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you got huge pass rushers coming from you.
Well, I feel like Carson Palmer is going to be injured by week 8.
Yeah, it kind of depends. If he's doing that 7-step drop, he's going to get lit up from week 1.
Yeah, and he's old. He just can't hold up to that. His arm fell off 4 years ago.
Yeah. We'll see if Bruce Arians can actually recognize this. You know, he's going to have to, in my opinion. He's going to have to recognize that Carson Palmer is not a seven-step drop guy because he doesn't have the deep ball anymore. He doesn't have that. So how is he going to adjust to a Carson Palmer?
I don't know that he does. I think he's an ego-driven guy.
Yeah.
Who thinks
he can make anything work?
I've never liked Bruce Arians.
Yeah.
I don't know. Every one of his interviews has come off as a little, I don't know, just a little hoity-toity, you know? Just like his shit doesn't sink. I don't know.
I think there's a million reasons that relationship's not going to work out.
So, you know, that's the biggest concern I'd have as a Cardinals fan, you know, going into the year.
Yeah.
You know, a couple things that also happened to him as well is they lose Adrian Wilson, their, you know, Pro Bowl safety.
That was a big one.
They lose William Gay, you know, cornerback, who I think is a good cornerback.
Yeah.
Stuart Bradley's gone. Linebacker.
To us.
Yeah.
Who he's listed as our fourth string guy.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a solid player, though.
He's a
solid guy.
He's our key rookie of this year.
You know, Kevin Cobb's out of there. That's fine. I don't know that Carson Palmer and Kevin Cobb, that's six of one, half of the dozen of the other to me.
They're both decent backups.
Yeah. Beanie Wells is gone.
Yep.
But what they do bring in is they bring in Rashard Mendenhall, who was done a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and the Giants really, they're doing pretty well at running back already, so. Oh, wait, no.
Oh, Steelers,
Different dude, okay.
Yeah,
right. Gotcha.
Yeah, Rashard Mendenhall from the Steelers.
Gotcha.
Was injured, let go.
Whoops.
Bring him in. For safety to replace Adrian Wilson, they bring in Rashad Johnson. I don't know much about him.
Like a downgrade.
Sounds like just a guy. They also draft the Honey Badger. Tyrann Mathieu, and I think that is a debacle waiting to happen. Dez Bryant. Look at all these guys. Justin Blackmon. Look at all these guys that come in with baggage. That we'll have good mentoring around them.
Mm-hmm.
Rah. And it always goes.
This guy was crying during
spiral.
All of his interviews. Really? Do you think that you want mentally tough players to play in the NFL? Granted, I don't know what it's like to play in the NFL, but I do know that the good players were mentally tough. They're not crying in their interviews. They don't have these addiction problems. They're focused on football.
I know there's no crying in football, Jared.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
He looks like a wreck. I mean, good luck. It'd be a great story if it works out for him, but why? Why would you do that?
It's a risk. And not only that, but with his size, he's not going to play safety.
No.
He's going to have to play maybe nickel corner, which, you know, he does some. I don't really know where there's a spot for him on the field, you know, just for his skill set. I think it's a terrible pick. One thing that I found interesting that the Cardinals are going to do this year is they're apparently moving Larry Fitzgerald all around the formation, putting him in the slot, moving him to the left side. He's primarily played on the right side.
That could create some mismatch, so I do like that.
Fitz is talking like he doesn't like it.
Really?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting.
I'd say let Fitz do what Fitz wants to do.
I think their defense is still going to be pretty solid. They have good linebackers. They have, you know, Khalil Campbell, as far as a D lineman goes, is really good. Mm. And, you know, obviously Patrick Peterson, he's a good corner. I think he's overrated as a cover guy. But if you look at his all-around game as far as kick returns and punt returns, as well as how
he's
plays
an impact
corner,
kind of guy. And I think as
a
corner, he will continue to get better.
Oh,
I think
me
he's
too.
Gotten better.
I think it's just at this point of his career, he needed to work more on his coverage skills coming into the league. And he is getting better, and I think he will continue to get better. But at this point,
he's a dangerous return man. That's what you hear the most about him.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the Cardinals, to me, I don't know.
They're not going to compete with anyone in your division.
6-10, 7-9. I, you know, maybe somewhere.
I'd say 6-10 at best, just because they're going to have to play you guys, the 49ers, and the Rams.
That's true. It's brutal for them in the division. It really is. So that's my number four
team.
So
let's go to your number three team, and this is probably going to surprise some people. We're actually eye to eye on this whole,
which is interesting because I feel like this is controversial. I think the San Francisco 49ers are going to be the number three team
in
the NFC West this year.
I do agree with that.
We'll go over, you know, some of the roster changes and some of the reasons I believe that. But I also want to bring up something about past Super Bowl losers. And history just kind of speaks to those teams dropping off the next year.
Yeah.
Over the last 10 years, the Super Bowl loser, only one time have they gotten any further than a first-round playoff loss.
It is a serious. It does seem to be a serious hangover for a team when they
go
something like that. It's dramatic almost.
In six out of those 10 years, the team didn't even make the playoffs the following year.
Yeah.
The most successful being last year's New England Patriots. After losing to the Giants the year before, they came back, go 12-4, losing the AFC Championship game.
Which they really kind of got their asses handed to them by the Ravens.
They did. They were not the same team. Nope. So, just by history, you got to look at that Super Bowl loser. They're going to take a step back.
Yeah.
On top of that, I feel like Kaepernick's game was definitely one that was more predicated on the run than Russell's. I'm not saying that Kaepernick's not a good thrower. He is a good thrower.
He's accurate. He's okay. He's a lot more accurate than I would have ever given him credit for.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that. But I don't know that he has it upstairs the way, say, a Russell does or a Peyton does or a Tom Brady does.
Well, when you kiss your bicep after scoring a touchdown, you automatically get the big ol' F you from me. Like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Fucking frat boy.
It's disgusting.
It's terrible, man.
You know, so
Shannon Sharpe just flexed and showed us his gun. You don't kiss that shit, you douchebag.
Exactly. You know,
like Kaepernick, in case you guys couldn't tell.
No, Kaepernick. God, put a fucking bend in your hat. I know we've talked about that before, but fucking stop that flat-brimmed bullshit.
And say hi to your mom. I know she just wants to milk it for money, but just throw her a bone and say hi to your biological mom. Come on, dude. She's still a mother. All right? She made her bad choices, and just see where it's at. Do that for her.
Kaepernick hasn't even played a full season. So to say that he's going to be really good the next season, again, I think is a stretch. I think if anybody, you know, that sophomore slump could apply, I think it could be to Kaepernick. I really do. So that's kind of where they're at in the QB position. But
he's without Crabtree.
I was just going to get to wide receivers. And that's what I think is going to be a big step back for the 49ers offense this year. Crabtree.
So who do they have at this point?
Well, they bring in Anquan Boldin.
Which is good, but
As a number one?
No, not even close.
That's who he's going to be?
Anybody, any number one corner can shut him down.
Absolutely.
I know he's a big physical guy. I've always liked Anquan Boldin, actually. But he's not a number one guy. He's a slot receiver at this point.
Played well in the playoffs, but I think the only reason he was able to do that is they had to put their faster corners on Torrey Smith.
Yeah.
And so they could put a slower corner on Anquan, a slower, smaller guy. And Anquan will beat up a smaller guy all over the
field. Oh, any day. He's a big physical guy, and he's got good, strong hands, too.
I love my chances of putting Brandon Browner on Anquan Boldin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Love my chances.
Even Richard Sherman, whoever you want.
Sherman, Browner, and then Antoine Winfield, you tell me that there are three San Francisco receivers are a kid.
I've kind of forgotten about that signing.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one, too.
It's a really good one.
So who else do they got besides Boldin?
So
Manningham had the ACL injury.
Manningham, yep. He's coming back from that. They have A.J. Jenkins, who they selected as like the 30th player in the draft last year.
Oh, okay.
Had a very lackluster camp last year. He didn't play in one game, as far as I know. They're counting on him to maybe take a step forward.
You hope so?
They also have wide receiver Ricardo Lockett. And for you Seattle fans, you know who I'm talking about. Speedster, always had all this, you know, potential, rah, rah, rah. Goes down to San Francisco. Apparently, he's Kaepernick's roommate and they're best of buddies. And they're doing all this stuff together, working out all the time. Everybody in San Francisco is saying that Ricardo Lockett's going to be the next great thing.
Like, what do they do together? Iron their collars so they stick up?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Exactly. So, you know, Kaepernick, Lockett. Hey, guess what, San Francisco fans? We sat up there in Seattle waiting for Lockett to be able to learn how to catch a football,
too. It'll never happen.
It'll never happen. It's just never going to happen. So enjoy that. They might be good buddies. They might be able to catch a cold from one another since they're roommates, but they won't be catching, you know, completing passes on
or people. An STD from the sorority house.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of where they are in the wide receiver front. I think it's
not a deep wide receiver core.
It's abysmal. So they also lose Delanie Walker. They're tied in.
Oh, man. I know he did have a little bit of a case of the drops, but talk about a fucking utility player who's going to get shit done.
Solid player. I really like Delanie Walker.
One of the better blocking tight ends that the NFL had, really.
Yeah.
It has.
So they draft the tight end from Rice, the starter, the one that we didn't draft. We drafted the backup one. they draft the starter from Rice. They're hoping that he steps in to fill that role. I don't know.
So, okay, to me, I mean, what does this sound like to you? It sounds like to me San Francisco has taken a step back after getting out physical in the entire division last year. Even the Arizona Cardinals gave them a little trouble on that with their defense.
Yeah.
It seems to me like a team who's riding a lot of hopes. A
lot of hopes. Because you talk about getting out physical with the guys they had. Well, they also lose Deshaun Goldston to the Bucks, and he was their physical enforcer. And they replaced him with Harvey Dahl from the Rams. Tell me if you... Does anybody in this league fear Harvey Dahl?
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. They also draft safety Eric Reed from LSU.
Justin Smith, another year older. Patrick Willis, I know he's still an elite linebacker. Yeah. That's just obvious.
Their whole linebacking crew is stacked. Yeah. I mean, there's not one bad thing you can say about that. They're in their primes. I like where they are at linebacker. They're dominant.
Yeah.
But
what about their running game now?
That's just
it. Are you really feeling
that
all
that much? They ran that two tight end set a lot last year.
And without a crucial Delaney Walker in there on that formation.
Absolutely. An older Frank Gore. I think he might turn 30 this year.
I know how that feels.
Yeah. But, you know, the wheels on the bus fall off at that point, you know? I mean, it's tough.
Not for us average guys, but if you've been playing football your entire life, you're feeling pretty old right now.
Absolutely. They lose Sopawaga. They lose Randy Moss.
Another name that you just rolled off your tongue, surprisingly.
Yeah, I practice that.
Damn, that's
I feel good
too.
About that.
Okay.
I'm so
all
proud
right.
of buttons popping off
I'll
my
give
chest
you a little
right
credit
now.
For these, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Pretty good.
They bring in Glenn Dorsey from the Chiefs to play D-line, which I think that's a good signing.
Yeah.
But their biggest signing out of all those that I really like is they bring in Phil Dawson as kicker and get rid of David Akers.
Ooh.
David Akers cost them a lot last year.
It was in his head last year.
Absolutely. Made it tougher, you know, on the Rams.
It's like Crosby in Green Bay. Once it goes, it goes. Even Prater had a streak where he was missing a few.
Absolutely.
Man, being a kicker is like putting in golf. If it's gone from you, you're just not going to have it for a while.
It's a mental thing.
Oh,
and
a hitter in baseball. It's going to leave you for a while, and you're just not going to find it until you find that one good swinger, that one good kick.
Yep.
Then maybe it'll come back.
Yep.
But, yeah,
they bring in backup quarterback Colt McCoy. That, you know, I think that's a great signing as far as a backup QB goes.
He'll be a good backup because he's a smart guy. He doesn't have very many physical attributes as far as his arm strength or anything.
I look at Tavarius Jackson, Colt McCoy as your backup. That's a wash.
Interchangeable.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, the arms race.
Although,
yeah,
we haven't even talked about the Tavarius Jackson thing.
Yeah, I thought maybe I thought maybe we might do that after the end of the
State
of the
West. That's good to bring him back just because everybody in the locker room had talked about how much they loved him and they were pretty disappointed when he left. Of course, Pete Carroll's bringing him back the first opportunity he gets.
Huge character guy, knows the offense, he knows Russell. Brady Quinn has been stinking it up in practice, apparently.
Really?
Okay. So... yeah, I like it.
And that, and he can be a clipboard guy that can sit there and go over Russell's game, and those guys can talk.
Yeah.
He seems like that's kind of going to be his role.
And if he has
analyze
to come in
game,
for two or three games, you know, he'll get you a 500 record. I like
it.
Well,
yeah, we talked about that earlier. And your backup quarterback, what you want to do, if you're playing four games, you want that guy to get you two wins.
Exactly.
Tavarius Jackson can get you two wins.
Yeah, and I think Colt McCoy can do that for the Niners. I really do. So
yep.
I think that was a good signing. One thing that I hope the Seahawks do is we let go of Cameron Mora, backup tight end, earlier this year. Signs on with the Niners. Was with them all through OTAs and all that. He was just cut the other day. Let's bring him back. I want a little information. Yeah.
Was this an inside job?
I think it was.
They sent him there to stink it to shit?
Cameron Mora's the mole. Yeah. I truly believe that.
I like this theory here.
Yeah. So
I think you're onto something.
Look for the Seahawks to bring him back, even if it's just practice squad, especially with the injury to Anthony McCoy. I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
But that brings me to the number two team in the NFC West this year. And people might think
I'm
crazy.
It's an overlooked team. When you look at what they did last year.
Very overlooked team. The St. Louis Rams. And the reason I bring these guys up, one, they only lost one game to the division this year. A damn good division. And you know who that was to? That was to the Seahawks.
And they were winning that
at
game.
At home. Week 17, after Russell Wilson had already turned the corner.
We were at that game.
The Rams' defensive line
wreaks havoc.
Is unreal.
They
Between
were unbelievable.
Michael
actually.
Brockers, Chris Long, Quinn, Langford, these guys are beasts. They chased Russell all over the place, disrupted our whole offensive scheme. I thought they played amazing.
The main thing that I was impressed with their defensive line is how much of a push they got up the middle that would then flush somebody outside, but then you got guys coming from the outside too. They just wreak havoc all
Speaking
over the place.
Speaking of those guys on the outside coming in to get sacks, Quinn, 10.5 sacks on the year. Chris Long, 11.5 sacks on the year.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are players.
I think they're above San Francisco just because they beat them twice.
Well, they beat the Niners.
Oh, and then they tied them.
And they tied them.
Okay. They got the Niners' number.
Yeah. Well, apparently, when Harvey Dahl went from the Rams to the Niners, he told the Niners that the Rams were getting tip-offs on what plays they were going to run. They had some tells.
Huh.
So, apparently, that's, you know, part of it or whatever.
But they're still disruptive.
Screw I mean,
Dahl, what do you know?
They're really, really good. They also bring in left tackle Jake Long.
Yeah.
They've had a turnstile at left tackle for a few different guys over the last couple of years. give Sam Bradford a little time.
Well, this is also Sam Bradford's second year under with Schottenheimer.
Absolutely. And I like the Schottenheimers.
Schottenheimer is going to be pretty good. And I think if those two can work together for two more years, I mean, I'm not really sold on Sam Bradford. I never have been. I wasn't sold on him coming out of college. But I think it'd be better having a guy for 2 years straight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. It'll be great for him. Look at how that worked with Alex Smith. I mean, once he finally had some continuity.
When you're comfortable and you kind of know what your coordinator is going to be calling and you can prepare for it mentally and physically, I think it helps you out a lot.
I think it's huge. They also bring in tight end Jared Cook from the Titans. A really fast guy, great hands, highly sought after. They draft linebacker Alec Ogletree. I think he's going to be really good. They have him projected as a starter. They also draft wide receiver Tavon Austin. Speed.
Man, he's going to be pretty dynamic, I think.
They brought in a lot of speed. I think this Rams offense is going to be improved. And don't forget, this
Steven
is
Jackson's
year two
gone.
I was going to get to some of their losses. Steven Jackson gone. Quentin Michael, their safety gone. Yeah. Harvey Dahl, their other starting safety gone. They're going to go with two young guys at safety so far, is what I can tell. But don't forget, this is Jeff Fisher's second year.
Yeah.
And Jeff Fisher's a hell of a coach.
You cannot count him out at all.
He's a hell of a coach. He is right up there with the Harbaughs and the Carrolls. He is he is really, really good. I think this team is going to get nothing but tougher. I think they're going to be – they could be 10-6.
They're more of a hard-nosed team, I think, than anybody in the NFL really gives them credit for. I think a lot of the other teams are watching what they're doing. They're a little bit intimidated by them.
Yeah.
But they're a hard-nosed football team.
They're a hard-nosed
especially
football team.
Defense.
Sam Bradford is a good quarterback when he plays on rhythm. And if you have a little bit of protection for him and some receivers that can create some separation, he's dangerous.
He does miss some throws here and there, but
it's generally once the play is broken down and he has to try to make something happen at that point, he's not a great improvisational quarterback.
That's true.
But what he is good is being on schedule, and he's dynamic at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look when he was at Oklahoma, I mean, he'd rip people up that way.
The only thing is who's the backup there in St. Louis? Do you even know that?
Kellen Clemens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Sam Bradford does continue to go through these little nagging lower body injuries that really hinder him kind of later on in the season.
He's got those chicken legs.
Yeah, but they were still effective.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tough. They're going to be tough.
So, you know, you look at that, I think they're going to be much improved. And honestly, so they lose Steven Jackson and, you know, the Atlanta Falcons fans act like they won the fucking running back lottery. Steven Jackson's done. He is just done.
And I like Steven Jackson, but he's a 3 yards per carry kind of guy at this point.
He won't bust anything for you. I think an upgrade for, you know, going to Richardson for their starting running back, Daryl Richardson, I think is going to be really good for them.
Yep.
So, I worry about the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, they're like, going to compete with the other teams, and I think they're definitely going to overtake San Francisco this year. So you got Seattle number one.
Yeah.
The Rams number two.
Yep.
San Francisco number three.
Yep.
And Cardinals in the shit bowl of the division.
Yeah, yeah, okay. They're in the shitter. And, you know, I don't put San Francisco at number three just out of hate. I do it just based on history of past Super Bowl losers, as well as just the state of their team and their roster. And, yeah. I mean,
let me just clarify why I hate the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, okay, definitive reason.
One of my first football memories was a score of 55-10 when Joe Montana handed us our ass. And then he came over from San Francisco. Oh, God. And then he came over from San Francisco, played an Arrowhead, and again, just killed us.
My dad's
Joe Montana, and I like him as a quarterback, but God, I hated him for years.
Oh,
man.
And you know my dad's a huge Chiefs fan, man. Oh. I remember watching those Joe Montana years in Kansas City. And,
there were some good battles.
But, yeah, winning finally in Denver Monday night, past J.J. Burden in the end zone, that stuff, you can't forget that.
It all stems from San Francisco, which is why I hate you guys.
Well, there you go. That's fair. And I hate him just because Harbaugh's a flaming fucking douche, as well as Kaepernick. They've turned into the douchiest team in the NFL.
I don't know. I know a lot of San Francisco fans that are just like, their personalities, I don't really know. What do you mean you don't know? You do know. They suck.
Okay, and one last rebuttal to San Francisco fans. They're all on their high horse right now about how many Super Bowls they've won in the past. That's all fine and dandy. Guess who didn't play in your division? When you won all those Super Bowls.
You were in ours.
Guess what? When the Seahawks came into your division, we kicked your ass year in, year out. You've been good for 2 years while we've been there. Yep. Shut your fucking mouth. We've dominated you. And guess what? We're dominating you again this year. So with that said, Jared, there's only one other thing to say.
In the Johns we trust.